Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll touch more on this as the show goes along, but once again, there are three more names put into the transfer portal with Penn State players, and the three names are Aaron Monroe, Danny Dalton, and Alex Gellerstedt. Now, Monroe's already announced he's absolutely transferring. And, you know, the other two will wait and see as to what results they get as they go around and talk with various schools. All right, this is really about the same as what I talked about when I was discussing Lamont Wade and others. Let's start with Aaron Monroe. Aaron Monroe, I think, has a chance wherever he goes to be a good player. The problem Aaron Monroe had here at Penn State was Aaron Monroe kept getting hurt. And if you're getting hurt, you're not getting reps. And if you're not getting reps, you're not giving yourself the best opportunity to have upward mobility on the depth chart. At the end of the 2017 season, they started playing Aaron Monroe more and more in the secondary. And the more I watched Aaron Monroe, the more I liked him back there. I thought he did a good job, especially against the run. I thought he could be a little bit better against the pass, but that's just getting a feel for being out in the field. But again, the problem he's had since he's been at Penn State, he consistently has spent more time, unfortunately for him, on the sideline at a practice than he has in the game because things happen. He just kept getting banged up. And what happens that if you consistently keep getting banged up and you keep missing practices, what happens is other people then are given the opportunity to pass you, and he got passed. It's not as if he could not help Penn State in the upcoming season. I believe he could. He could give them the necessary depth at that safety spot that you're looking for. And I think he has a chance to be a very good player. But again, for him, he might be looking at it saying, well, you know, Garrett Taylor went out after a targeting. They started Jonathan Sutherland. Nick Scott went out with a targeting. Again, they started Jonathan Sutherland. So obviously he got passed out, because those would have been opportunities for him to get in there and be the guy and play. But, you know, you hurt yourself, you know, and you can't control. You can't control being injured. You can't control that, obviously. But that ended up, to me, being, in the end, what stunted his growth up the depth chart here at Penn State, because he wasn't out there for enough reps. And now you get to Danny Dalton. Danny Dalton is another player I like. But he sits there and he's looking at the depth chart right now, and he sees he's four. And I thought in the preseason, you know, again, he's another guy that's fought injuries here. In the preseason, I thought he had put himself in a position to play some. Early in the season, he did play some, and then he got banged up again. And in the process of that, obviously, other people emerged. Pat Freiermuth, Nick Bowers came back, Jonathan Holland, and now Danny's sitting there and he's looking at the depth chart and he's seeing that he's four. Not only is he seeing that he's four in the depth chart, he's seeing one's a true freshman. And not only that, a really talented true freshman. So I was not really surprised to see his name in there as well. Can catch the ball, I think runs good routes. He's a long guy. Who you could put in the slot as well as play on that wing at tight end. And a player that when he was out there, I really liked. Alex Gellerstedt is somebody who floated between the second and third team, but as the season went along, he spent more time floating toward the third team. Every once in a while, he'd be out there getting second team reps. You notice the other day when 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the players opting for the NFL draft, and Connor McGovern and Ryan Bates happened to be two of them. And I was talking about positions, and I mentioned, hey, look, Mike Miranda's in a spot right now where you kind of felt he was pushing to get more playing time. said, the tackle spot, we'll see. I said, you know, you got Rashid Walker, and I mentioned Dez Holmes, you know, the junior college transfer from Lackawanna coming in. You notice I never mentioned Alex, and that's because I just felt like he spent a lot of time floating between second and third team. And on my chart, I've got a lot of players on my chart, but when it comes to linemen, I only have first team, second team offensive linemen because Penn State, you know, they don't, during the course of the game, you know, they'll rotate a lineman in here and there, but for the most part, they don't stray beyond those two lines. And Alex was only on my depth chart, I want to say, once all season. And to be honest with you, I can't tell you whether it's footwork or technique. I can't tell you that. That's something, you know, Matt Limegrover would have to tell you, you know, as to why he was floating between second and third. And I think most of the time it was the third. So, I mean, he's looking for more playing time. I mean, so a lot of these where you sit back and you look at them, there is some logic behind it as to why players are leaving. They want to play. They want to play. And there's so much talent now here at Penn State that some of them are running into roadblocks, and every once in a while that roadblock was created, unfortunately, by an injury. All right, we'll come back. Matt Leon in a moment. Neil Coulong next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Neil Coulon coming up in the next half hour. More on the transfers and the transfer portal coming up, too, in the 4 o'clock hour. We did open the show talking a lot about Aaron Monroe, Danny Dalton, Alex Gellerstadt, and wish them nothing but the best. Hopefully, wherever they end up, I think wherever they end up, they're all going to contribute wherever they end up. I mean, they're good players. But again, they would have been players that added depth for Penn State. And as you know, I've talked a lot about how important depth is. It really is important. All right, we'll get back to more of that later in the show. Penn State basketball tonight, Nittany Lions take on Iowa at the Jordan Center at 7. And, of course, the Eagles season has come to an end. With that, we bring in Matt Leon from Philadelphia. Matt, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
All right, last year at this time, you were worried about street lamps somehow surviving. That is not an issue, I believe, this time. Let's start with this. In the end, they had to play 5 of their last 6 games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And I looked at the Chargers. Chargers going, Baltimore, let's go back to Los Angeles. Then let's go back to New England. So, I mean, that wears on you. Did that eventually wear on a team that was already fighting depth to begin with?
It kind of seemed like the second half, the Eagles just never really had any jump in their step. And I don't mean that in the idea that their effort waned or anything like
no.
that. But it just kind of did look like that maybe they were at the, you know, the tank was running on empty. And they couldn't get off the field on those third and longs. And it was actually, I think, kind of remarkable that they still had a chance to win the game in the final 2 minutes, because one of the things is the second half went on, even though it was, you know, a 3-point game, a 6-point game, it felt like the Saints were winning by 20. It was
right.
an odd dynamic, but, you know, they still had a chance there. So I do think, yes, to answer your question, I think that did play a part as kind of, you know, they got out to the fast start and it looked like they were going to get more, and then they had the interception, and then the Saints, you know, with that bold fake punt. And
yeah.
You kind of feel like that took a lot of air out of the balloon. And from that point on, the Eagles were really kind of climbing uphill. And they never quite seemed like the same team as they were in the first quarter in a few minutes.
Sean Payton, when they won their Super Bowl and beat the Colts, opened the second half with an onside kick because, look, he knew he had to, quote, do something. That the fake punt was a signal to me that, hey, look, the Eagles are playing a much better way. We got to do something to change the dynamic here. Is that how you felt too?
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, and you got to look at that. That is, you know, a lot of people are killing Doug Peters. I shouldn't say a lot of people. People have brought up the idea that the Eagles actually declined a penalty the play before. It
yeah.
was 4th and 1. It would have made it 3rd and 11. And some people are saying, oh, you should have taken the penalty. I don't know of any coach that would have taking the penalty in that situation and giving Drew Brees another down to get a first down. I think that was the right call. You know, if that doesn't work, there's a good chance the Eagles go in 21-0, and that Superdome is raining booze down on that Saints team. So that was really bold. You just got to tip your hat to the other guy, and I agree with you. I think the fact that the Eagles really had them on their heels and, the Saints were doing nothing. Sean Payton knew they had to do something to jumpstart it, and that was a really, really bold call.
And also, a good coach has to know his team. They've gone from this wide open, all over the place, 40-point-a-game. Last month, they've had to grind things out. That's how they did it yesterday, is grind it out. That means you've got to change the dynamics if you're grinding it out. And that's, I think, it's another reason why he went for the fake punt, because he knew his team was not the same team as September.
Yeah, no, I mean, think about it. They scored 20 points in that game. Eagles scored a touchdown there. They're at 21.
Exactly.
So, there's a good chance that the Eagles may have had enough if they get, if they stop them and get stick it in the end zone, they might have had enough points to win the game right there. It was an interesting game. The momentum shift was significant. I'm watching that game sitting on my couch, and when Will Lutz misses that field goal, I just kind of say to myself, like, they've got a chance to win this game. That's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And unfortunately, the one ball, probably one of the few times you'll ever see a ball go through Alshon Jeffrey's hands, and it ends up being catastrophic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Of all the guys, because I think he's got great hands, and it's just one of those things. Lattimore caught it, and that was the end of it. But I'm with you. When Lutz missed the field goal, because the Eagles had blown up all the running plays.
Mm-hmm.
They were pushing them back.
Yeah, they had made the play before that on the third down. The Saints had run like a little screen that the Eagles just destroyed and ended up losing like 5 yards, and that was the reason they missed the field goal, I think, because that kick's probably good it probably just drifts inside from 47. So, that was really big, and when that happened, and then when they get the roughing the passer
yeah.
penalty, and all of a sudden, the one thing I will say, I thought it was, I don't want to say strange, I was surprised that they actually ran the play that ended up being the interception, because I thought they would run it down to the 2-minute warning. Because
yeah.
in that situation, you're doing that odd dance where you want to score, but you want to try to score
right.
with no time left so the Breeze doesn't get it back. And I really thought they would take it down to the 2-minute warning, kind of take a deep breath and go from there. But they snapped it, and we all saw what happened.
Exactly. In praise of Nick Foles, in all likelihood, he's played his last game with the Eagles. You can't blame him. And you could tell even Doug Peterson felt that way about it too. Just one more on him, and here's a guy that had been a Pro Bowler, then thought about getting out of it, then he gets back in it, and he did incredible things.
No, he did. He's got the most unique sports resume in the last 40 years, I think, not just in Philadelphia and pro sports. I don't know anyone else that you could equate to his type of situation. He was phenomenal. I'm not going to say he's the greatest quarterback in Eagles history,
no.
but he's got the, he's given them some of the greatest moments in franchise history, and he'll always be remembered for that. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, just to see where he ends up, how he ends up there. It's going to be an interesting offseason. He's right at the top of the list, but there's several other guys that, you kind of look at and you wonder how the future is going to play out for them. That's the one thing, any time a season ends, it's always difficult unless it ends with you hoisting the Lombardi trophy. But, for this group, you're going to see some key pieces that probably most likely are going to move on. And it'll be tough for the fan base because, these aren't just going to be players that were beloved, but they're players that helped do something that had never been done before.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, who would be some of those key pieces you're going to take a long look at and say, I wonder if that person will be back next year?
I think, in addition to Foles, another guy at the top of the list is Brandon Graham. He's actually a free agent. I don't think it's crazy to think he could be back. I think you have to look, it is probably more on what he is willing to take from the team, because this is probably, I think he'll be 31 next year, so So this would probably be his final big contract, you know, but how big, it's always hard to, it's easy to say, always, if he loves it here, he's take a hometown discount, but right. You know, your window for earning power is so small in the NFL. I'm never going to, you know, kill a guy for taking more money or whatever, but, he's a guy, he's still a very good player, you know, obviously nowhere, not past his prime at all, but the Eagles aren't going to want to give him a ton of years.
No.
They're going to be tight cap-wise, or not tight cap-wise, but they've got a lot of decisions to make. So it's going to be interesting. I would say it's probably 75-25 he's gone, but I don't think it's crazy to think. And then guys like Jason Peters, you know, when he was in there, he could still play at a high level, but he was in and out of the lineup so much because of injuries. It's going to be interesting to see how they address his situation and what they do with him. Those are the two guys, in addition to Foles, that are the first ones that come to mind. And then I think you got another group of guys, I think like Ronald Darby, who was hurt most of the season, the cornerback they got in the trade last year. He's a free agent, but he's been hurt most of the time when he hasn't been here. And maybe some of these young defensive backs actually played their way into bigger roles because of how they were able to perform here down the stretch. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It really is.
It is very easy when a team wins for people to say, oh, what a coaching job. Oh, man, they did a great coaching job because they won. Sometimes you do a better coaching job in the year you don't win. Considering all the injuries, what kind of coaching job did the Eagles do this year?
I think overall they did a really, really nice job. It's interesting. You know, midseason when they were sitting at 4-6, you had a lot of people wanting them to bring John DeFilippo back to work on the coaching staff after he got hired in Minnesota because offensive coordinator Mike Groh, they said, wasn't getting it done, and Doug Peterson's play calling wasn't the same without Frank Reich. And it's interesting. You don't hear any of that. I haven't heard any of that discussion the last month and a half. It's almost as if maybe everybody wasn't as bad as they seemed. Jim Schwartz gets some criticism. Specifically, I think it's more just frustration because one of the Achilles heels of this Eagles defense, and it popped up throughout the season, was their inability to get off, not on third down per se, but on third and long. And you look back at the, you know, obviously it happened a lot last night against the Saints, but the game they blew in Tennessee, one of the big reasons they lost that game, they couldn't get off on third and even fourth and long. The game against Carolina that they blew the 17-0 lead. So this was like something that kind of trickled up, but I think if you take a step back, eliminate the emotion and the frustration, the job Jim Schwartz did where he was basically, you know, if you had to list the defensive backs that the Eagles had by the end of the season, you know, by the second half of the Saints game after Rasul Douglas got hurt, you know, they're running in guys that you'd never heard of, and they're playing guys that were on the street a month ago, and that's a tough way to live. So I think overall they did a really, really good job.
I think when you go into the meeting room, and you walk in there, and there are eight guys with a tag saying, "Hello, my name is." I mean, that you know, that tells you at that point that, you know, you're dealing with a different deck. Matt, always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Next half hour, transition to the Steelers. And also talk some general football notes with Neil Kulong of USA Today. More on the transfer portal coming up in the next hour. We did open the show, by the way, by talking about the three most recent ones to go into the transfer portal. And check that out on the Steve Jones Show podcast. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai has the brand new Hyundai you deserve with savings of over $7,000. Buy a $25,000 2018 Santa Fe for only $18,259. That's a savings of over $7,000. A 2018 Hyundai Elantra is discounted to an unbelievable $14,810. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has a 2018 Santa Fe Sport that was $34,890 and now only $28,840. Hyundai comes with America's best 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. No matter what size SUV you're looking for, Sunbury Motors has it. 2019 Hyundai Konas, only $23,210. 2019 Hyundai Tucson, only $21,110. 2019 Santa Fes, only $26,775. And the 2019 Santa Fe XL starts under $30,000. Now is the time to get the new Hyundai you deserve from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. More on transfers coming up in the next hour. Neil Kulong joins us from USA Today. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil, welcome. All right, more on Antonio Brown. We always talk about fit. Every time I look at it, I always feel like his best fit is still the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, I said the same thing about Le'Veon Bell last
year. Yeah, it's true.
So maybe we're challenging the idea, at least that how the Steelers view it philosophically for a fit for a player on their team. But Brown has made this offense, in my opinion, as much as Bell has, as much as anybody else has. He is a freakishly good football player. I don't care what quarterback he had. Antonio Brown has talent for days. My opinion, the best receiver the NFL has seen since Jerry Rice. It's a really tough situation that they're in because it doesn't matter what package you get back. There is nothing that is going to give you another Antonio Brown. Guys like that don't come around all the time. I don't think those guys are in this draft. If you think that, then great. You know, make the trade and pick whoever it is that's going to replace Antonio Brown. I don't see that happening as easily as other people seem to think that it will. But at the same time, skipping out on a game, that's a pretty bad thing.
That's line in the sand.
Yeah, we wouldn't even be at this point if it wasn't Antonio Brown. Anybody else is gone. You know, it's just a really difficult decision for the Steelers to have to face after a very difficult season. These are rough times. These are rough times in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure what they're going to do to come out of this, but it's going to be interesting. This is probably their most important offseason, maybe since Noel left. I'd put it at that level now.
I've always felt, and of course, obviously, a lot of this route goes to my strong ties with Jack Ham, but I've always felt the Steelers have always been a we organization, and this one of the few times I feel like there's a lot of me in the organization.
Yeah, and it's hard not to agree with that. At the same time, I'm not sure how many times in history they've had this overt of a problem with this legendary of a player. And when I say legendary, I'm not trying to draw people into the stadium. I just mean that this guy has put up numbers that nobody has in this era or any other era. He creates a lot more controversy than he probably needs to or should. The team has tried to pay him to keep him in line. He's done some weird stuff over the years. They haven't really thrown up too much of a fuss. He's kind of burning the candle at both ends now, and it really puts a historic franchise like the Steelers in an odd situation. And I'm not sure there really is a true precedent for this. The Santonio Holmes trade, completely different, not the same player at all. A guy that was not signed the previous, going into the next year, didn't want the money the Steelers were offering him, was facing a suspension. That's not a difficult trade to make. In the market itself, Amari Cooper for a first-round pick, Josh Gordon for a fifth-round pick, there are plenty of elements of both of those trades that kind of accent where Antonio Brown is in terms of the scale of the NFL. I don't think there really is a precedent for the situation that they have. And I'm not sure how they're going to handle this, but if anything, I don't see enough people talking about this. If we really want to pick out a point in time in which Art Rooney, now that Dan has passed, the time that he's by himself, essentially, this is the one and only time his leadership will really be challenged. And in many ways, his legacy, not his family's, but his legacy is going to be largely judged on what he does with this and how the team comes out of it.
Yet they have been the bastion of stability. You mentioned Chuck Knoll in that answer. Well, you go from Knoll to Cowher to Mike Tomlin. Well, that's all they've had since 1969. All right. And for the most part, the assistant coaches have remained stable. My goodness, I mean, it's been maybe a year since I've seen Dick Hoke. But, I mean, Dick drew only one paycheck in the course of his lifetime as a running back and a running back's coach, all with the Steelers. So this is one of the few times I felt like there was a revolving door there with the Steelers in terms of the coaching staff. So what about the coaching changes where you got one guy doing, I'm going to go to the running backs coach for the Cardinals, and Mike Munchak going out to the Broncos?
Yeah, that's the bigger story here. For one, the Denver Broncos made the best move they've made in probably a 7-8 years, and it's been a very successful stretch for them. Mike Munchak is the best position coach in football, period. What he's done in Pittsburgh is unrivaled at any other point in history. It's amazing what he's done. For the Steelers to be in the position now where they can get rid of two of their starters to save money and have those jobs filled by previously undrafted free agents who perform at least as well as the starters do, to contribute to the best offensive line in football, that's amazing. The fact the Steelers let him out of the building, I there's a lot that goes into it. I don't want to make too much of it, but man, that must have been hard. That must have been really, really hard. And good for Coach Munchak. He's earned the opportunity to be closer to his family. I'm not trying to disparage his decision in any way, but for the Steelers, that's got to hurt probably more than anything else. The legacy that he set up. Let's keep in mind, too, we want to talk about the revolving door. What about the revolving door at offensive line coach? I mean, back in Sean Cooler's day, or God forbid, Jack Bicknell's day, they were terrible. They had nothing on the line. Nobody developed for anything. Munchak came in and changed that culture to a point where they've got the best unit, hands down. And these guys are being now replaced by, you don't have a premier left tackle. You've got Alejandro Villanueva, who signed for nothing compared to what he probably would have got in the open market. A huge part of that was because of Mike Munchak. Ramon Foster is among the best guards in the game. He's been paid basically nothing his entire career. Yeah, you've got a lot of money invested into David DeCastro and Marquise Pouncey for justifiable reasons, but it's a unit. You look at them operate as a whole, they've changed everything they've done offensively because of that offensive line, and Munchak has been the driving force for all of that. I even with the flowery praise that he's getting now, I still don't think people recognize and understand really how good he was in his time in Pittsburgh. And good for Denver for seeing the value to make that move, because that's going to be the best move they make this offseason, that's for sure.
And that's one of the odd aspects of this. He interviewed, and so did Vic Fangio. Fangio got the job, and Fangio's been in that line, I think, waiting for a long time now. So the door finally opens to him, great. It's so rare when the, quote, runner-up also gets a job.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great move by Denver. One thing I really like what John Elway did, the guys he interviewed all got other jobs, and he took two of the people he interviewed and brought them on staff. If you're picking between, if you're the Broncos, if you're picking between Fangio and Munchak, you can probably understand why he might go with Fangio in that situation, considering the defensive success that he had. Keep in mind, Elway knows full well he got destroyed in a Super Bowl with his offensive team. 2 years later, he rebuilt everything on defense, and they dominated.
Right.
That's what he wants to get back to. And I think Fangio gives them more of that insight. Wow. And on top of that, if you can get Munchak in the same role, leverage it a little bit more entirely because of his family situation in Denver, he knows he can get that. It's a smart move. It's a smart move. I hate it, but it's a smart move.
Right. No, he wants to become a tougher, better defensive team, which is what he won with Peyton Manning against Carolina. Also, what was the other key? They ran the ball. Great offensive line play. So he's made two hires and put his team back on track to how they won it in Super Bowl 50.
You're making me mad. Steve. I got a bad feeling it's going to be a lot worse than 24-17 was last year against Denver the next time they play. Because, they got a lot better.
They got a lot better.
And good on them for seeing it.
What do you think about Kyler Murray putting his name into the NFL draft? Obviously, he still has the Oakland A's option there, and it's going to be his leverage moving forward. I don't know how often you saw him. But do you see a guy that can play the NFL game despite the fact he is not big in stature?
I'll say this first. The one thing I really enjoy about the job that I have is it requires me to have to dive in very quickly and learn rules of something that I didn't know the day before.
Yeah.
getting back into Major League Baseball contracts and how all that stuff works, I had to call like 50 different people to really get a feel for who Kyler Murray was as a baseball prospect.
Right.
For me, I think that's where the situation is ultimately going to be determined. Watching him on a football field, I'll be honest with you, this is the real wrench in the gear of the whole thing for him. I think I need to see another year from him in football. He doesn't have that time.
No.
And I think that's why he's probably pushing the way he is. He has to make a decision now based on what he feels, and I don't think he's going to know truly which is best for him for at least another year. I want to see another year of him on the field, football-wise.
Right.
He threw from a pristine pocket. He's got a nice arm. He threw a lot of stuff straight down the middle, which to me, that's not great quarterback play. That's much more design. It's much more just pure arm strength when you're throwing against air. There's nothing there,
and
really.
And I'd like to point out, it was against a lot of those were Big 12 defenses.
Yeah, I mean, you see it. It's not that he doesn't make good throws.
Right,
it's not
he
that he doesn't see this. It's good. You can't take anything away from him, but
no.
It's like, I didn't see any adversity. I didn't see really.
Alabama, yeah.
What's he doing when he's getting beat on? What's he doing when his receivers aren't 5 yards wide open? What kind of player is that? That's the NFL prospect. It's not how good you were in college, obviously. It's how he's responding to what a high-level defense is putting on him. And I don't know if I saw that enough this year to say I want him in the first round. Somebody will end up taking him in the first round because, frankly, you're not going to be able to convince him to not play baseball unless you make him a first-round pick.
Right.
So anyone who wants him is going to have to take him in the first round. It's a weird segment of what the draft is turning into with the quarterback position.
Well, Scott Boras is his agent. Does Scott Boras have any football clients?
He doesn't.
I didn't think so. He's always been a baseball guy, and that is his agent is Scott Boras. Now, I know they've had to deal with Drew Rosenhaus before, but the NFL's never seen anybody like Scott Boras.
Yeah, if you're Scott Boras, though, right now, you're chewing Rolaids tabs like crazy. I mean, this whole thing just makes him look – teams are going to have a real tough time dealing with him in the future when it comes to the amateur guys. The pro guy, your Bryce Harper's, no problem.
Yeah.
He'll get what he wants. But for the amateur guys – the Oakland A's look really, really bad right now.
Yeah.
In the end, you had to look at it and evaluate it. There were plenty of people saying this kid, last June, this kid is a Heisman Trophy candidate. He legitimately could do that. You're paying him $4.5 million, which isn't really all that much in the grand scheme, but that's a big investment for a baseball team.
Sure it is.
The first-round pick doesn't mean anything compared to what it does in the NFL, but that's a sizable investment they're giving him that day, without expecting him to play for probably 3-4 years minimum.
Right.
And he's not going to be that young when he gets into baseball. That's really the issue I'd have with him. As a general manager of an NFL team, what I want to know is from Kyler Murray, why are you not going to do to me what you just did to Billy Beane in the A's? Right. I want to know that before I take him in the first round. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I really don't know. This is going to be crazy. This will be the story of the offseason.
I mean, there's going to be a risk because he has, what's the golden word in every negotiation? He has leverage. And even though in baseball there is a cap on bonus money that can be paid out, I want to say the cap, Neil, is like $7 million. So he got 4.66 of it. That's $7 million for all the prospects combined. He got 4.66 of it. All right. And the NFL, of course, has a rookie salary scale. Well, that doesn't extend to the bonus. The key is going to be if they can come up with an astronomical bonus that doesn't work against the cap, that might be what swings it.
They can't. They're stuck. I mean, whatever slot he gets picked in, pretty much that's going to be his bonus. But at the same time, a first-round quarterback, first of all, pick in general, let's say outside of the top 10, make it easy for now. His fifth year option is essentially the transition tag in the NFL. For a quarterback, that's like $18 million. And I can't even imagine what it's going to be after 4 years when, in this hypothetical situation, Murray were to get to that point. They're going to hang on to him for a lot of money. He will make way more money as a quarterback and a first round pick in
yes.
the NFL
yep.
than he was a baseball player,
no doubt.
Period. But the difference between Lamar Jackson and whoever was taken 33rd last year is astronomical.
Yes.
That's the risk that he has. He has to gamble on the idea that there will be a team wanting to lock into him for that long. And again, if you're a general manager of a team, what assurance do you have? Keep in mind, he's not a running back. He's a quarterback. Yeah. That's a huge investment in the first round.
Oh, I know. Well,
I don't know. I see both sides of it. I think it's nuts. This is going to get interesting.
I want to say it was 1982. Stefan Wisniewski, who plays for the Eagles, his dad, Leo, was here at Penn State. And I want to say the New Orleans Saints, for some odd reason, had to forfeit a first-round pick. And at this time, I don't know, I want to say there were eight teams in the NFL at this point. So the Colts, I think it was the 83 draft, the one they opened up with Elway. Well, they also had the first pick of the second round, which was 28. So Leo Wisniewski got picked 28th. And his agent said, hey, yo, there's 28 teams. Don't we get first-round money? And they're like, no. Hersey's like, no, that's not how it works.
They did away with a lot of that for that very reason. Same thing happened with Drew Brees. Keep in mind, Drew Brees was the last he was the last first, second-round pick to be taken before the Texans came into the league. So technically he was the 32nd overall pick, but first in the second round. So a lot of the history was built on that kind of thing. And what eventually got them to slotting the process the way they have it now is because of those kinds of things. But Murray, he's going to blow a lot of this stuff away. And from his perspective, I don't know. I think in the end, he'd be better served playing both for one more year. And that's my opinion. I've seen him play baseball. I know more about football than I do about baseball. But you watch him, you can see some skill there. And there's not really a whole lot of defensive tape that's available. People I've talked to don't suggest he's a real high-end defensive center fielder. But
yeah, but he's fast.
There's enough there.
He covers ground.
Yeah, obviously. He's a phenomenal athlete. We've seen the arm on a football field. You can throw a football, you can throw a baseball. You have to imagine that's there to some degree. But the biggest issue in my mind with him is with baseball, you need at-bats. Yeah. You need reps.
And that's
we don't
issue.
Know how good of him anymore.
Right.
So he's 21. He hasn't played the game for all that long.
Right.
For me, it'd be more like, well, let's throw another even crazier wrinkle into it. You want to know the biggest reason why he's talking about the draft now? There are no quarterbacks in this draft.
No.
They all, for whatever reason, decided to wait until next year to go into the draft.
Haskins, Jones, and Locke are the other three guys. I mean, you're not exactly blown away by him.
Yeah, he's getting passed up next year. All things being equal, if next year's scenario with the quarterbacks in the NFL draft same right now, he's getting passed over. He's not experienced enough as a lot of those guys.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the time on the field. Other people are going to go elsewhere. And again, considering his situation, he's up against a huge bonus in baseball for his decision. He has to take a pretty significant risk that he is absolutely going to be a first round pick.
Yeah,
that I don't know if anyone else has had that kind of a gamble before. It's fascinating overall, but I think, my gut instinct, I think he's more of a football player. I think he has to play more. And ironically, I don't think he's going to get that by being a first-round pick this year because he's going to have to go top 10 to do that. He's going to have to beat out the kid from Ohio State to be the Giants' next quarterback. He's going to have to beat out that kid from Duke that's played a bunch in a great pro system. That's a big gamble for him to take. I don't know. He's in a tough spot. He's in a real tough spot.
You know, it's interesting, though. Sometimes when they see less of you, it leaves more to the imagination. You and I both know there are a lot of GMs that have very vivid imaginations.
He's going to have to bank on that because, frankly, that I promise you, that's what it'll be. Whatever team that takes him in the first round, they're banking on what they think he could be eventually but have not seen on film. And that's not something teams do with quarterbacks very often.
The one tape I'd look at over and over again would be Alabama. He made some plays with his legs. He made some plays with his arm. But he was harassed all night, and Oklahoma did, I mean, yeah, they did some stuff in the second half. But, I mean, when Alabama had to put the foot to the accelerator to the floor, right, okay, his body was in the way, and they just crushed it. I mean.
Yep. So. Yep, that's what I mean. In the bulk of his film, it's like wow, these guys just aren't playing defense at all.
The bulk of his film was Iowa State. I mean, okay, come on. Neil, always a pleasure. You know, we always talk about fits being important, and this may really disturb you, but you fit with this show.
Steelers take Kyler Murray at 20. That'd set my year for sure.
The
we'll have that convo.
The Steelers
come
April, take Kyler Murray at 20. We're going to do a 10-part series.
Oh man, that would be the most non-Steeler move ever. And it could happen because we've seen a bunch of non-Steeler moves. Yeah. Nothing they do anymore is anything we're used to.
Yeah,
fun stuff. We love it.
Any team that takes Artie Burns in the first round, you do have to have some questions.
Does he even makes a team next year? Let's talk about that next week. Is he even on the roster next year? Is there a point anymore?
That is a good question. All right. Thanks so much, my friend. Great to have you, Neil.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Kulong, USA Today. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. More on the transfers in the next half hour. Thanks for joining us today. We'll come back with more after the top of the hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.